Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection for October 20th, 2011. Well, Jeff Groenwald, the Director of Development and Strategy at Context with Lorna Duick, posted an interesting question on his Facebook wall recently. Reflecting on the death of Apple founder Steve Jobs, Jeff wrote, quote, from the Apple Board of Directors on Steve Jobs' passing, Steve's brilliance, passion, and energy were the source of countless innovations that enrich and improve all of our lives. The world is immeasurably better because of Steve. Well, Jeff asked the question, is the world immeasurably better because of Steve? The question hasn't generated quite the response that I anticipated it would, considering Jobs' impact on technology and even our day-to-day lives. One responder doubted, quote, very much that the world is better simply because Steve Jobs, like many other visionaries, served us by introducing technological innovation. The third world, underdeveloped economies know very little of Mr. Jobs and are likely unaffected by his life. Technological innovation is a double-edged sword. I don't believe more people will come to know Christ than would otherwise have because of Steve Jobs. Therein lies the difference between Jobs and Gutenberg. End quote. Well, personally, and this is how I responded to Jeff's question, I think the world is immeasurably different because of Jobs. Publishing, graphic design, music, and film are different because of Macs and Apples, and they've made the way newspapers and magazines, etc., are designed and or distributed. Programs like Adobe and InDesign, which run measurably better on Mac than other Mac products than PCs, means everyone thinks that they can design newsletters and brochures. But iPods, iPhones, iPads have encouraged consumerism and the accumulation of stuff, and benefited Jobs' pocketbook as well, and in some cases, the user. But does this make the world better? It depends on your definition of better. Well, deep down, I think many of us hope to have as an immeasurable impact on our world through our art, as Jobs did. But Jobs' main priority was to create a ubiquitous consumer product. I know that we have a much greater reason for the art we produce. A purpose Hans Ruckmacher best voiced in his book, Art Needs No Justification. Quote, in short, we should not look for fame. The meaning of work done well is the joy to have been able to make something that was of use to somebody, and in that way adding positively to the flow of history in the direction of the kingdom of God. Well, what are your thoughts? Do you agree with me? Do you disagree? Well, drop me a line at robert@salawministries.ca. That's robert@salawministries.ca. And let's begin a conversation about this. Keep listening, and I'll repeat the email address at the end of today's show.
From the corner of my eye, there's a tear I'm trying to cry, but the feeling can't be found, like a note thrills in a song.
was My Last Amen from the Down Here CD, Ending is Beginning. One of the group's vocalists, Mark Martel, has been hailed as the second coming of Queen vocalist Freddie Mercury after an edition of the song Somebody to Love was uploaded to YouTube about a month ago. Since then, Martel has been caught up in a whirlwind of interviews, including a guest spot on The Ellen Show. He's on the phone with us tonight to talk about Down Here, the Queen extravaganza experience, and what all this may lead to. Good evening, Mark.
Good evening, Robert.
Now, before we get to the stuff about Queen and Queen extravaganza, many of my listeners may know you as the higher-pitched guy from Down Here. And in case there's somebody who hasn't heard the story, when and where did Down Here get together, and how did you get involved with it?
Well, the band was originally formed by Jason and I, who are the two lead singers. Jason's the low voice, and Jason is from Southern Ontario, actually, and I'm from Montreal. We ended up going to Briarcrest College together, where we met our future drummer, Jeremy Thiessen, who is from British Columbia, and our bass player, Glenn Lavender, who lives in Cambridge, joined us in 2001 when we were signed to a record label down in Nashville. So we made the move from Saskatchewan to Tennessee in 2001.
Now, when did you know you wanted to pursue music as a ministry and a career?
Probably when I read the biography of Keith Green, written by his wife Melody, and I was probably around 16 years old, and it really changed my life, and it really gave me an idea of what it looks like to have a life of ministry and a life of music at the same time. I grew up in a really musical family, always loved music, but I didn't really think pragmatically that it would make sense to chase music as a career. Obviously, coming from French Canada, you just don't see that, especially in the church. So I didn't really grow up with many hopes of that. I thought I'd be, you know, going into something like science, a lot more useful. But God just kept opening doors, especially when I went to Bible college, and just kind of been walking through them ever since.
Well, what took you from Quebec to small town Saskatchewan?
I don't know. I didn't really have, when I was 18, 19, after high school, didn't have a lot of direction in my life. I didn't have a lot of, you know, I didn't know what I wanted to do, and my dad had a friend who went to Briarcrest, and I was like, okay, well, Bible college sounds like a good idea. I had previously enrolled in Ottawa University, and some weird circumstance there, I couldn't get into the school because they ran out of residences. And anyway, so that was kind of a closed door for me, and I see now when I look back. But it was just kind of on a whim almost.
Well, when you're looking back on both your career and on your ministry, who have been your influences? Like, who have been some of your key musical influences?
Definitely Keith Green was my first biggest influence. I just loved the passion that he lived with. And it's funny, I met a lot of people down here in Nashville who knew him personally, and he died in 1983. And they said, you know, a lot of people really look up to Keith for great reasons, but if they knew him personally, they probably wouldn't like him so much because he was so just on fire all the time and very abrasive. Other influences I've had, you know, I definitely got into Michael W. Smith. His Eye to Eye record in the mid-80s was a key record for me.
Mm-hmm.
DC Talk later on and Jars of Clay were kind of the artists that when I heard Jars of Clay's first album, when I heard Jesus Freak later on, I thought, man, the Christians are making, you know, music that sounds new to me, and I was just really inspired by that.
Well, when you and Jeremy started down here, were you looking for that type of a sound? Was that sort of the thing you were trying to accomplish?
As far as something new?
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, a lot of artists just strive to do something that's never been done before. Obviously, there's nothing new under the sun, but, you know, I guess new is all perspective. But Jason and I come from very different writing backgrounds, writing styles. He grew up in New Brunswick for a little while, so he's got that maritime Celtic thing. He had that going on for a long time, and I thought that was really cool because I had never been really exposed to that music. And I was more of a like top 40 radio listening kind of guy. The way I learned how to sing was to sing these great singers that were on the radio. And so when we kind of first met, it was because of a musical thing. A mutual friend of ours put us together in a worship band, and Jason and I automatically just hit it off musically, and we're like, hey, man, why don't we do some writing together? And we got together a couple times and wrote a couple songs and thought, wow, this feels very exciting and vibrant, and it's got a lot of life to it, so let's see where this goes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you mentioned the writing. I mean, both you and Jason are the two key writers for the group. Walk us through how the songwriting process works for you.
Actually, normally what happens is that, well, Jason and I live about a mile apart here in Nashville, but it's surprising that, you know, we hardly ever write together these days. We've both got our little home studios and in our bonus rooms, and we've got our little setups there, and we can both do kind of complete sounding demos with drums and bass and everything in there just on our own. So normally what happens is we'll write on our own, and then by the time, you know, we get close to getting into the studio, we'll look at each other's songs and say, hey, I see some room for improvement here, or I like this, I don't like that. That's generally how it goes. Occasionally we will write together. There's one song on our new album, On the Altar of Love, that we did completely co-write, and that song is called Rest. It's actually our current single. We got together at the end of 2010 after just a really whirlwind, crazy amount of touring kind of year, and we were just exhausted just from being away from our homes, our families for so long. So Jason came over one day. We decided, hey, let's try writing together. We never do that. Usually it works out really well. It just takes a lot more emotional investment, a lot more work to make it work just the two of us, because we're both so strongly opinionated. So we wrote that song Rest because we were just tired, and automatically went to that verse in the New Testament where Jesus says, come to me, all you who are tired and heavy burdened, and I will give you rest. And that wrote itself.
Yeah. When you're going through the writing process, are you the type of writer where the words come first, or the music comes first, or it varies from song to song?
It definitely varies. The best songs, though, I find are written with the main idea in mind at the very beginning, like Rest. We knew we wanted to write a song about Jesus giving us rest to our tired and weary souls. The music, if you have a strong thematic or lyrical idea, usually the music comes easier.
Now, where are you getting your ideas from?
Just life, basically. And another thing we get from is, since we're on the road so much and we don't get to go to our home churches very often at all, to stay, you know, fed in the Word, what we do is we listen to a lot of podcasts by various preachers, apologists, and we get a lot of our ideas from that. And a lot of people tell us that they find that our lyrics are a little deeper than the average music out there, and that probably comes from the fact of, you know, who we're feeding ourselves with, as far as ideally, as far as what preachers we listen to.
Yeah, and I think from what I've been listening to in the last little while, I think On the Altar of Love has some of the deepest lyrics that I've heard coming out of you guys.
Thanks.
Yeah. Now, do you keep a list of ideas, like you got them on your iPad or something like that that you've got?
Yeah, sure. It's funny because every time I'm in church, I'm almost distracted by myself looking for song title ideas in a sermon. I can't sit through a sermon without thinking, okay, I wonder if I could write a song about that idea. Oh, I've never heard that before. So I'll pull out my phone and write down that little nugget of truth. And later on during the week when I'm at home, I'll pull it out and like, oh, okay, let's see what I can do with that idea.
Yeah, I'm with you. I do the same thing with my writing. I'm still back in the pen and paper era, but I'll do the same thing. And any scrap of paper, an idea hits, I'll just start writing it down and go back to it later on. Looking at your career, what are the challenges that you faced along the way, both as an artist and as an individual?
Well, remaining faithful to our calling and not letting our own personal trials and weak or temptations get in the way of that. One of the biggest challenges as an artist is to know when to quit, honestly. And we do believe that we're called to this, and that's why we're doing this. I don't think we would be doing this if we really believed this wasn't our calling. It's not an easy life, being away from your family on the road, and just the sacrifices that come with that, and you know, we're in our mid-30s now, and we look at our friends and, you know, college and high school friends who've all got, you know, a lot of great jobs and great careers and providing for their family while we're still kind of, in some ways, starving artists, believe it or not. It's, you know, the music industry is not easy to make it in. You can spend your whole career trying to make it, get whatever making it looks like.
Yeah.
But you know, God has provided for us. We've definitely seen His faithfulness in all along the way. We've made some mistakes, but we keep short accounts within the band with each other. That's another thing that's a challenge when you're working so closely with other people. We're four guys who are, you know, four sinful guys who share a really close work together, and we spend a lot of time together, and every now and then we've got to say, hey, there's something going on here, whatever it is, we've got to talk about it and work it out, or else this band is going to implode, because it really depends on us having clean slates between each other.
Yeah, when you're traveling on buses across the country, it can be very close quarters indeed. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Down Here vocalist Mark Martell. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
Each morning I get up, I tie a little, can barely stand on my feet.
Take a look
in the mirror
and cry.
Lord, what you doing to me? I spent all of my years in believing you, but I just can't get no relief. Lord, somebody. Can anybody find me somebody to love? I work hard every day of my life.
Welcome back to Arts Connection. And we're back with Mark Martell, who is the vocalist of Down Here. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Mark. Now, let's get on to Queen Extravaganza. How did you hear about this?
I have a friend here in Nashville who does the engineering. Whenever we get into the studio, he's the guy that handles the soundboard and recording. Great guy named Todd Robbins. And he emailed me one day. He found out about this contest called the Queen Extravaganza. Pretty much the day that it started, I think it was September 20th or 21st, something like that. And I went to the website, checked it out, and sure enough, it was the band, the drummer from Queen, Roger Taylor, was putting together this band, this tribute band, to take Queen's music out on the road next year and do a tour. It's going to be called the Queen Extravaganza Tour, and they're looking for young musicians to play their music. They're looking for singers, guitarists, keyboardists, drummers, and Down Here actually happens to be taking a little more time off the road next year. Our families are growing, and so we need to make time for that. But my wife and I don't have kids yet, and you know, rather than go out and find another sort of part-time job, I would rather be singing, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for years, people have told me consistently after concerts that I remind them of Freddie Mercury, and that's not something that I can escape. Even when I try not to sound like the guy,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't make any difference. People tell me I sound like him. So I thought, hey, wouldn't this be a fun little, you know, side project to Down Here? It works out perfectly with my time schedule. I love what I do with Down Here. I have no desire to stop doing that, but this could be kind of one of those open doors for me. So I submitted to it after my wife counseled me to keep going, because I had a lot of doubt about entering this contest. It's never been my dream to be in a tribute band, but I thought, since it's Queen and I sound like the guy, I thought, you know, why not? Give it a try. And the day after I entered the contest, the video immediately went viral.
Yeah, and it's got, like, you've got 4.4 million hits right now, as well as the numbers of people that have reposted it on their own YouTube accounts and that. Why did you choose Somebody to Love?
Well, first of all, they only gave us four songs to choose from.
Yeah.
And that's the one I knew, it's the only one of the four that I really knew well. Had I had my pick, I think I would have picked Bohemian Rhapsody, because I have performed that one in the past, actually at a church, believe it or not. Somebody to Love, I think, fits really perfectly. It's a very timely song still, even though it was written in the 70s. If you read the lyrics,
mm-hmm.
I had never thought of this previous to the Queen Extravaganza thing. it's really a modern day song. If you look at the lyrics, there's not really much different there going on than stuff you would read from you know, King David in the Psalms. It's a guy who's had, you know, he's on hard times. He can't get ahead. He's he feels lonely, and he's wondering where God is in all of this. And I just think it's just a beautiful song for our time still.
Well, and I think that's one of the beauty of Queen's stuff. I mean, even when you mentioned Bohemian Rhapsody, I mean, their stuff is timeless. The lyrics that they wrote are timeless as well. But looking at all of this and looking at the hits on YouTube, the interviews galore, you've had articles in the Wall Street Journal, the National Post, and of course, the sort of the penultimate of all this was the guest shot on Ellen. What's been the experience? What has this experience been like for you?
Well, it's just been another one of those kind of signposts for me, with an open door that God has. No one could have planned this. You know, I think I heard one of the people in the Queen camp say, "Yeah, we would have been totally satisfied with 200,000 hits, let alone 2 million hits." No one expected this to happen. You can't plan for these things, and it happened. And now I'm here in my home in Nashville, thinking, "Okay, well, what's the next step?" You know, to me, from where I stand, this is an obvious open door. And you know, there's also the chance that this is something I have to say no to in the end. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Depending on what my expectations will be for this tour. But at this point, it's a fun thing. You know, carpenters don't always build churches. This is music, and I think it's really good art. I think Queen wrote their music is timeless because they wrote a lot of truth. You know, whether they were all truth is God's truth. You know, whether they were Christians or not. I don't think they're Christians. I'm pretty sure only God knows that. But you know, just because they weren't believers, they wrote a lot of really cool songs that reached the human condition and expressed that in a really unique way. And I really respect the art that they wrote. And so I'm just excited to sing these songs if I'm given the opportunity for it.
Now, looking at all this, and most of the comments I've seen about your involvement in the contest have been positive, but there have been a few that have wondered, you know, they brought out the old argument about, you know, are you still following God because you're now going after this, you know, secular goal? How are you handling both the adulation you're getting? I mean, people are calling you the next coming of Freddie Mercury, as well as the people that are saying, you know, what's happening with your spiritual life? How are you handling that?
You know, it's definitely tricky, and as soon as this whole thing went viral, the first thing that popped into my mind, I was like, oh, okay, well, here comes the criticism from the Christian community, you know, and my mind automatically goes to Amy Grant in 1991, Heart in Motion.
Well, and that's what I thought when I was reading some of the criticism going, I was around when Amy Grant made that split and covering Christian music. And yeah, same arguments are coming through.
Yeah, and you know, it's hard. I want to approach this whole thing in love and kindness because that's how Jesus approached everything. But at the same time, I'm like, man, the only people he was harsh with were the religious people. So at the same time, I want to keep that in mind. But you know, it's expected. I've had some criticism already. But the overwhelming majority of people, not only in my life, but just random strangers who are in the community of faith, are saying, you know, this is amazing. You know, God works in mysterious ways. Keep going, brother. All this sort of stuff. And I'm just excited about what my life can be a part of in the greater story of the gospel. Somehow, this is a mysterious, unprecedented thing that I'm aware of. And I just want to be faithful in all that I do. And maybe it's going to look a lot different than what, you know, we've seen in the past. I don't know. It's definitely going to look a lot different than my last 10 years, I'll tell you that much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm always going to have criticism. I'm totally prepared for that, and I need to be prepared to give an answer for that. And obviously, this isn't for everyone. You know, there are lots of believers out there who, for a good reason, have decided that rock music is not going to be a part of their lives. And, you know, there's a bit of part of me that's a little bit sad about that. You know, I've, so in a way, because of this association, I'm going to be shut out of their lives for at least a period of time. And that's something that, if this is a door that God has opened in my life, that's something that I'm willing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And all that I do, I hope is to His glory.
Saying that about some people that might be shutting you out of their lives, do you think there may be a backlash against down here itself?
You know, I don't know that. I haven't seen that at all. Actually, I maybe seen one tweet recently where a guy said, "Hey, down here, it's what's all this stuff about Queen? You know, it's not all about Queen." And I just thought that was kind of funny. I don't know. Maybe this guy didn't really realize what is going on, but yeah. Obviously. Things are kind of about Queen right now in a way.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's just those things are going to come. But I think down here, if anything, has received more listeners who never would have even considered listening to Christian music. I've already seen that. And the coolest thing for me has been to see people I went to like high school with, even elementary school that I've friended on Facebook, and they're like, "Man, I didn't even know you sang, and you play in this band? What?" Like, a Christian band, that's weird, but your music's amazing. I love it, and that's just amazing to me.
Great, some open doors. Listen, just running out of time here, where can people find out both more about Down Here and also the Queen Extravaganza contest? Because I know they're going to be going into in the next few weeks, they're going to be hitting the voting stage with the public. So where can people find out about Down Here and Queen Extravaganza?
Very easy, queenextravaganza.com, downhere.com. And we've also just started markmartellmusic.com.
Great. Mark, thanks for your time tonight.
Great talking to you, Robert. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Arts Connection. And my guest, Mark Martell, be sure to tune in next week for another look at where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, email robert@selawministries, that's S-E-L-A-W ministries.ca, or follow us on Twitter at selaw13, S-E-L-A-W-13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.
You've been listening to Arts Connection, a production of Selav Ministries. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday evening at 10, right here on Faith FM.